Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, hello.
Hello, hello.
We just have to have a little special mental health minute, which we did last week as well, where we jump on a call.
Mental health minute?
Where we jump on a call and I'm like, one of us is just, the vibe is off because...
Life.
Because of life. Baby. And then I was like, I can tell I'm projecting this negative energy out. And then we just had a big rambling discussion about everything. And now I feel...
It was weird because... Last week you were projecting that, but you weren't feeling it. And this week you weren't projecting it, but you were feeling it. So yeah. This is why we have to have a mental health minute to just check the vibes, check in.
Yeah, the thing is mornings, as I've mentioned before, which I found out is a real thing, are worse for people who have depression or can be, because it's... There's a specific term, which I literally wrote about in an article and now can't remember, that your symptoms are worse in the morning. I don't know why, but I think it's just you wake up and you feel really stressed and stuff. So then I am always a bit of a mess in the morning and I'm like, I have so much to do. I'm so busy. And then by about 12 p.m., I'm just like ticked off all the to-do list and I'm like watching Indian Matchmaker.
That's nice. I've started watching Bridgerton again.
Oh, the new one.
I just love Bridgerton. Why do I love Bridgerton? I just love it.
I know. I saw the new ones pop up and I was like, a bit of grace.
I know one woman who'll be excited.
Should audition.
I know I'm not unique because it's like the biggest show in the row, but God. Shonda just knows how to make some juicy, horny TV.
I want you to be on season 4.
Of Bridgerton?
Yeah.
Can you imagine being a little... I always think when I watch like Jane Austen, like the movie, like the whatever movies and stuff, just like how ugly I would look in that era. I think that all the time. I have a face that's made for now. Like if I wore a bonnet.
Big faces. We have big faces.
A big face with our hair all curled up behind. No man would like fall in love with us and want us to live in fucking Haverfield Hall or whatever the places are called.
That's really funny because I was watching Mona Lisa Smile on the weekend, which I'd never seen
love.
It before. Have you seen it?
That, yes, that movie is a bit of Isabel Truman. That's like an AI bot made a movie for you. We've got Julia.
Believe
we've
it.
Got Kirsten Stewart. So Kirsten Dunst. Oh my God.
We've got Julia Roberts, Julia Stiles, Connie Britton.
Connie Britton's in
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So why I brought that up just now is because Connie Britton is, as she was in He's Not That, Just Not That Into You, the ugly girl who can't get a boyfriend. And I was like, she's literally beautiful. And she just has
she's so beautiful.
A round face. And she was the one that Hollywood cast in every single role of being like, we need an ugly girl who can't get a boyfriend.
I didn't know she was in anything like before being the mom in Friday Night Lights. So,
I don't even know what that
is. Yeah, I missed that. So it's like a TV show about, I don't know, soccer players, football players.
Wait, have I got the right person? Am I saying the right name?
it's feeling wrong in my head, like Connie Britton does isn't giving me period drama.
Oh my god. But... Okay. Okay. This is the girl I mean. Why have I got Jennifer Goodwin?
Jennifer Goodwin, yes, yes.
Jennifer Goodwin.
She was always like the mean girl. She was like the annoying wife. She was...
She's the one that can't get a boyfriend where she... And he's just not that into you, remember?
Yes.
And in, literally in Mona Lisa Smile.
Everything you were saying before is making sense.
Yes, sorry.
Yes, it's the round face. She was... played Johnny Cash's wife and Walk the Line, and it's like, we all want to marry Reese. We don't want to be married to Jennifer. Like, I feel bad for her.
Yeah, same.
It's more her energy than her face, I think.
Yeah, she has the profoundly positive energy. Yeah, so anyway, I know that I've looked through Julia Roberts' entire IMDb and gone down the list and tried to watch every movie because... As someone who doesn't know film or, you know, like directors or anything that well, I feel like she's the only person that I've ever been like, I'm going to watch her whole back catalogue, as people do to like Tarantino. And then I know I've seen that before, but then for some reason it never piqued my interest. And then I was scrolling and saw it and had a beautiful Friday night in watching it. Also, it has that thing of the thing that I think all women our age or like of our generation or just women in general love watching movies and shows set in school, especially single sex schools. I'm just like,
that's so true.
Give me more of that. All I want to see is these girls in their university. I'm more into, because I think we're a bit older now, but yeah
lots of girls together.
And Julia Roberts is the, for anyone who hasn't seen it, came out in 2003, and I didn't know, and I just listened to one of the girlies on the Close Friends just sent through an episode of Sentimental Garbage that they did on Mona Lisa Smile. So I watched the movie and then I listened to the podcast about it. And they were talking about how it was like super controversial when it came out in 2003, and it was like critically panned and everyone hated it. Wait, there's someone else in it massive who we just didn't say. What's her face? Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, a real all-star lineup. I remember it being panned when it came out, and I remember renting it from like Video Easy when I must have been like 10 or 11. So I think a lot of it went over my head. But I remember the iconic scene with Julia Roberts and Kirsten Dunst, and she's like, don't disrespect me just because I'm married. And she says, I can't even remember, but it's good.
Yeah, yeah. So Julia Roberts goes to Wellesley Girls' School, which is the school Hillary Clinton went to, and it's set in the 1950s. And Julia Roberts is this teacher from California who comes, and they're the smartest woman in the whole world going to this school, and she comes to teach them art history, and she realizes that it's essentially just, what is the word? There was like a term for it, like a holding school or something, where basically all the girls were there just waiting to get married. So they were never actually going to do anything with their careers. They were just smart and studying while they primed themselves for marriage.
I mean, that sounds nice to me now.
The glory days. I know.
We didn't have to get jobs.
I know. And then Julia Roberts, yeah, was like pushing against it and just being like, you're the smartest girls in the world. And Kirsten Dunst was this horrible bitch who, yeah, just wanted to get married and kept bullying Jennifer Goodwin.
Does it stand up? Like, is it, do you think it was unfairly?
Forgot to say, bad cameo by Dominic West.
I literally screamed when I saw you put up that.
Couldn't believe it.
On the Close Friends. Because I was checking in on Jake's belated thing and it was there.
Yeah, way to ruin my weekend. I liked it. I mean, it's a very Isabel Tripman film. So I liked it. It was an easy watch. I love watching those women work. I just love watching... I think all of those actresses are just so captivating in their own way, and all of them together, it was just so great to watch. And then I think like what a few points that Sentimental Garbage pulled out was like a few plot parts of the storyline, like the Dominic West love story between him and Julia Roberts really didn't make any sense at all, even if he wasn't a filthy pig. It was just like there was no point of that even existing, and it also just took away from her character's like morals and stuff in such a weird way, and it just didn't even go anywhere anyway. It was so random. So there were points that were kind of weird, but all in all, loved it. 10 out of 10.
What's the backstory? Was it like directed by a woman?
Directed by men. And then it panned because people basically at the time were essentially just being like, this film was just made about a bunch of girls in a school. It didn't even go anywhere. That it didn't say enough about feminism at the time. Like it was people were giving these really harsh reviews when, I don't know, it was just like a film. There's so many films like that about men, and also it was saying something. Like maybe it didn't ham at home as much as people would have liked in 2000. I don't know. 2003 was just such a weird time for that movie to come out, I think. But they were saying that it was the first film that Julia Roberts, that was like really critically panned in Julia Roberts' career.
Right.
Yeah. Because, and it's kind of a serious film, whereas Runaway Bride was the other one, but that was just like a rom-com.
Yeah, that's like the moment that the Julia Roberts like non-stop hit train came to a halt.
Yeah, even though she does such an incredible performance in Kirsten Dunst is amazing.
I know we've said it before, but like Julia Roberts, there just never was, never will be a movie star like Julia. Like, just,
don't have to tell me twice.
Face was made to light up a big screen. So charming, so beautiful, so captivating. Just end of an era, really.
Well, I haven't even seen the new rom-com she's in with George Clooney.
Apparently it's dire.
Obviously it's not going to be good, but just to see her face in it and his and
George.
And George.
Bit of George.
But yeah, obviously it's not going to be good. I don't know why they did that. It's so hard. It must be quite hard to, like, I don't know what to do now for someone like Julia, who she mostly does a Gwyneth and just chills in Malibu and like looks after her kids. But unlike Gwyneth, who actively like hates acting, Julia's probably wants to get back into it, but there's no roles for her. She needs to do a serious Jessica Biel spin.
Yeah, I think she tried to. I think she did like a few years ago that it was like an Amazon or an Apple show, yeah. Do you remember? And it just went nowhere. She's made a couple of bad choices. I feel like she's got bad people around her. Like that one with George Clooney, I don't know. I'm pretty cynical. I feel like that was just a cash. They just got offered like a stupid amount of cash. In which case, I'm like, if you're going to pay a stupid amount of cash, why not just get a good script?
Yeah.
You know? Can't be that hard.
Yeah, what was the one she did? It was a few years ago and it was about, it was kind of like Nicole Kidman one? It was kind of like Nine Perfect Strangers, but for military men who'd come back from war. Yes. And had PTSD. And then they were in this facility. This is where it gets crazy. They were in this facility and like drugging them with like acid and stuff to help them overcome PTSD or ketamine or whatever it was. And it was originally released as a podcast series, and fucking David Schwimmer was one of the voices on it.
This is also cursed. Yeah, this is.
I listened to
this
it.
This is what I was thinking of just then.
Yeah.
You listen to the podcast, the things you do for Julia.
To the podcast.
I feel sorry for David Schwimmer.
And it was the first podcast that was like, it was, the podcast was set as if it was, as if you were listening to like a TV show. I don't know how to explain that in better words, but it wasn't as a normal podcast where they're explaining a thing and it's this investigative episode. It was like fiction. So they were like speaking to each other as characters the whole time, kind of like the Heidi Fleiss thing, but the whole time. It was crazy.
That is terrible. I do kind of remember that being a thing, the dramatic podcast, but it just makes no logical sense.
We should do one.
Let's write a play and record it to Christmas. Oh, wait. The Hylia already did that.
Wait, what did they do?
They did like a Christmas play and Pandora wrote it and they acted it and it was...
Did they?
It was cute.
Yeah. What the fuck? We should do one for Bridgerton.
We should
create... And get Zach and Amar to be the men. Let's get extras and get the girlies to play roles as well. Jake can
That's
play a role.
That's a great idea, Jake, to play. We should get ChatGPT to write it. I've just been listening to a lot of AI stuff that's frightening me. But
have
I
you?
I also love ChatGPT.
Yeah, do you use it ever?
Not like, I don't really use it, but sometimes Zach and I just, to pass an evening, just have a bit of fun playing with ChatGPT.
Like what?
It's pretty funny. And it, like, just like getting it to write episodes of like shows and stuff. Like if you get it, if you like say an episode of Seinfeld, but blah, blah, blah happens and it starts to like freak out. But it's really good, which is funny because the writer's strike is on at the moment. And if you're across this in LA, big news that seems very dry. But a big part of it is apparently because a bunch of studios have been looking at like getting their screenwriting teams to just oversee input into bots, basically, to write scripts for stuff. And now they're having this huge strike. In part, it's to do with other things, to do with pay and like streaming services and stuff. But part of it is to do with like putting in legal guidelines that they can't be replaced by AI and all the places are refusing to do it.
Yeah, I saw that with one of the big papers. What was it? Like, it wasn't the Washington Post, but it was like one of the big papers, and they basically like laid off half their team and then said that they were going to start relying on AI. And then everyone was just like, wait, are you going to replace us by AI? And their response was like, not right now.
It's really scary because if you think about like even a Succession or something, I don't know. I feel like if you fed all the existing scripts of Succession into a pretty sophisticated, maybe not ChatGPT, but like a sophisticated bot, it would pump out 8 episodes that were pretty respectable that like a writer's room of a quarter of the size could tighten up. Like I think we think in it, we have this romantic idea in our heads of like it would never be the same as the real thing and et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's so sophisticated now that there's shit that we – would watch that if we were told afterwards it was written by an AI bot, we'd be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and the human element could be tightening up the way we speak and the little quirks mm-hmm. and gestures and stuff that the AI wouldn't maybe pick up on. But yeah, no, I totally agree. It's pretty crazy. And did you see that another guy, so there was the Google guy who quit ages ago and was like, AI are sentient and we're fucked. And Google was like, no, they're not. Yeah. And then another guy has just come out and spoken to the New York Times being like, I regret my life's work because this technology is evolving so much faster than we can handle and it's really scary. And he was just like, the only way I can sleep at night is by being like, if I didn't do it, someone else would have. And then all of the other guys, like Tess, like Elon, and all those people are saying to ChatGPT, the ChatGPT creators company, to slow down because we're not sure about the like world repercussions yet. Like we need to slow down this technology. And then they're just like those guys, which is probably true. Those guys are only saying to slow down because they just want to catch up. So we're not slowing down. And I'm like, okay, everybody.
Yeah, this is literally it. Yeah, I was reading about that guy. You just mentioned today. And what he was basically saying was, I was just like, when people say like AI will annihilate us or overtake humanity, I always think it sounds so dramatic and over the top, but he was like giving tangible real life examples. And I was like, this is so fucking terrifying. So he was saying as one example, say you get to the point where you have like AI automated weapons, which is pretty legit. And if like it hasn't happened yet, will probably happen in the next few years. Say Putin gets those and just programs them to like like attack and kill as many Ukrainians as possible, which is fucking terrifying. Like there's nothing really to say that I'm going to explain this badly, but like the technology, because it's programmed to be smarter than humans, it can like get a bigger picture idea of what its purpose is and then turn on humans, and it will be able to do that because it's part of its programming. Or like a better example would be, say you get an AI bot to try to figure out how to solve climate change, and it figures out that the best way to solve climate change
is to
wipe humans off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Like how much this guy was basically just saying, like, how much more advanced it is and how much more advanced it will be in the next 5 to 20 years, even as someone who like invented this technology is terrifying. And no one who's in the field has any concept of like how we rein in, how we regulate it, how we make sure this shit that's possible doesn't happen, because we all have this idea that humans are still the ones controlling it. But what he said, which I found really terrifying, is he's like, there's no example in human history of a less intelligent group ruling over a more intelligent group. Like, it's always the more intelligent group rules over the less intelligent group. So the idea that we're going to be in control of technology that's far, far, far more intelligent than us doesn't make logical sense.
And by that you mean like humans and animals, obviously.
Yeah, like humans and animals, basically, yeah. Or like, like frogs and...
What do frogs
however the chain of evolution happened, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bugs and frogs, spiders and flies, like whatever.
Yeah. I know, it's really terrifying. I got in a little AI hole as well a few months ago. What did you just listen to?
The Guardian pod.
Today in Focus. No, yeah, someone just last week was like, can you guys please put in the show notes what you're talking about? Because I want to listen to it after. And I was like, oh. We need an intern. But yeah, it's really scary. And it's what's really scary about it is obviously everyone's, I don't know. I'm just like, how are we so short-sighted with everything? Like, how are we so short-sighted again that we're chasing money? These companies are chasing money and wanting to be the first to put out these technologies in such a rush that they're going to kill us all. Like, I'm like, we're going to be dead, so you're not going to be able to spend your money.
Yeah, it's like how far the capitalist project has gone is just so insane.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's
so insane.
It's on another example, and just a slower but still very fast thing is the climate change. It's like once you realize that governments know how to solve climate change, and they're just not doing it. Like, we have solutions for climate change that we're not doing because it will mean that they're going to lose money. So we're just killing the entire planet. And it's getting to the point now where it's like we're almost at the point of like no return, but no one cares. They're like, we'll just do this little Paris agreement, and then no one sticks to it. And
yeah,
that wasn't even like covering the basis of what actually the huge changes that need to happen to actually stop it. Like, we're still building fucking like coal mines and stuff. That's like very similar to ChatGPT. ChatGPT is just like faster.
Yeah. And it's like the knock-on effects of it. So I read this amazing, amazing article this week. It's so long. It's in the Monthly, and I can't remember her name. She's an Australian writer, Sarah Krasnostein. And she wrote that book, The Trauma Cleaner.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She wrote this article about I don't know if you would have been across this because it was in Australia, and I think I kind of missed it, where two police, like 6 people were killed in this rural Queensland town where this basically group of 3 people had become super COVID conspiracy theorists, and the police came to their house and they killed the police officers and their neighbor, and then they were killed by police officers in the crime. It was like a huge story.
Oh my God.
That I totally missed. It was massive, like Waco kind of vibes. But this whole piece that Sarah wrote is just about like how disaffected and disillusioned and lonely people become when they feel like society has just moved on and forgotten about them, and just how we have, because we're so driven now. This super American thing of just being so driven by like money earning capacity. Like, we don't have any sense of community anymore. I know this sounds like a very old school thing to say, but it really is. People get incredibly isolated, and just the fact that technology has moved us so far so quickly that a lot of people are being left behind, and the like, we're not creating an infrastructure for it, and it's like sending people into these nutso YouTube holes because the only places they're finding community is in these like crazy online holes.
Like that's so tragic that just happened. But it reminded me of recently on Twitter, there's been this huge like outcry because one of the main incels has left the incel community because he got a girlfriend. And he did this, he's called the LeBron James of incels. And on Twitter, yeah, it was going crazy because he like released a statement just being like, thank you all, I've enjoyed being part of this community, but I'm no longer here anymore. And everyone went crazy. They're saying this is the equivalent of LeBron retiring. Yeah, and Rolling Stones wrote a piece on it. A 33-year-old incel, commissage, a moderator, of the forum, has caused a stir by announcing his departure due to sexual activities. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it reminded me of that when you were saying like people get so like upset and angry and whatever when they feel like society's left them behind, and that's like the whole incel community.
Yeah, I think there's like some crazy statistics now on how little men age between like 20 and 30, like how little they have sex. Like I think it's something like only a third have had sex in the last year, or I'm pulling that number out of my ass, but like some crazy amount. And it's like they're now considering holding boys down a year in schooling because they're just, women are outperforming them at like such massive, massive levels.
We're AI.
They need to correct. We're AI. But people are basically, that was a thing in this article, like the kind of neoliberal experiment that we're now in, where like manual labor has been replaced with kind of more thinking jobs that require more emotional intelligence and skills, like, and certain degrees of like old school sexist things like zero maternity leave, and you know, obviously it's not perfect by any means now, but like all these progressions we've had, women are like soaring in this environment, and men really don't know where to find themselves or how to exist in this world. And I think for so long we've treated that with like an eye roll and a like, oh, who gives a shit kind of thing, because it's still been so important. Like men are still, it's still a patriarchy, and obviously men aren't fucking like oppressed, but I think there is this thing that's happening now where there's this like young generation of men who are just being outpaced by women, and they don't know how to handle it. And I think it is kind of like tragic that they don't have a framework.
Yeah, it's also very easy for us to eye roll about it where we live and like around the kinds of people we interact with and where we grow up. But it's like, imagine if you're in middle America and you're raised by a really conservative family, and you have this view of the world and how it should be. And then it's like they all need to watch Mona Lisa smile.
Yes, that's when I become president, every boy will watch Mona Lisa smile once a year. But yeah, it's so true. It's like a really interesting, weird thing that's happening.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
forgot to tell you why I have my headphones plugged in right now. And do you know why it is?
I have been desperate to know.
So I'm usually on earpods, and the only reason that I have these plugged in is because my earpods are without a doubt 100% getting thrown around the washing machine right now in a wash cycle, and I can't even be fucked. I was like, good riddance. I couldn't even be bothered good when riddance, I realized honestly. Going down to like try and salvage them. I was just like, oh, get fucked.
I bet you they just won't be, and they'll just pop up somewhere again and you'll be stuck with them.
They don't even fit in my fucking ears. I don't understand how people use these things. The normal ones, before they made AirPods Pro, the normal ones completely fine. I would go running, no problemo. The fucking AirPods Pro, every single time I run further than like 5K and get a bit sweaty, they're just like falling out all over the show. I can't listen to my podcast.
Yeah.
Can't do anything.
I don't have a Pro.
You don't have Pros? I didn't like until I lost my current ones at a hotel and they pretended they weren't there even though I could see them on my find my thing. And then I bought Pros and then I hate them and now they're in the washing machine.
I like cannot lose. I always think I've lost my AirPods and they always like pop back up again and they're just like a horrible friend that you don't want to see arriving in my life.
I know. Okay, speaking of men, let's dedicate this episode to the men of this world. We're going to do...
We know you're struggling.
We know you're struggling. So we wanted to point out the hot ones, not the incels, the hot ones. So there's a piece on The Face about what makes a heartthrob, which was came out a few weeks ago and is super interesting. And it basically just talks about how the whole world, just out of nowhere, but also because of The Last of Us, just got obsessed with Pedro Pascal. And he's become just like our ultimate new heartthrob, him walking the... He's really led into it in such a sexy and classy way, walking the Met steps in his little red short shorts. And the culture is obsessed. And they just basically... It's kind of like the New York Magazine's It Girl piece they did for heartthrob men.
Yes, the companion piece. So this writer says, from Elvis's swiveling hips and Brad Pitt's glistening abs to Paul Newman's baby blues, Idris Elba's intense gaze, and Timothy Chalamet's bedhead, whatever your generation's particular predilection, one thing is certain. For a sweet blip of time, it drove you to destruction. So it's like this idea that the heartthrob embodies something specific about that generation, which I find interesting because I feel like Brad Pitt's abs in Thelma and Louise in particular, it's just not a thing now. Like people just don't, that just does not embody the current heartthrob. The heartthrob now has to have like something a bit different going on.
Yeah, the heartthrob now has to be a bit of a soft boy. And I mean, I think it kind of reflects how women actually... the men women are actually attracted to IRL. Because it's like we'd be attracted to the Brad Pitts on screen because they're hot. But in real life, We'd be attracted to like the skinny Timothy Chalamets who are a bit weird.
Yes.
And
yes. So the heartthrob has become more aligned with, what we want instead of what Hollywood men tell us we want.
Exactly. So... yeah, obviously there's like the artsy ones. There's the Pedro Pascals. There's the Harry Styles. Harry Styles' moment is over though.
Yeah, truly. I think what I find interesting about the heartthrobs now, I think there was definitely an era where like it mentions... It's actually interesting because it's like mentions Ryan from the OC, but no one I know actually had a crush on Ryan. They all had a crush on Seth. And it's like, is the bad boy... I feel like the bad boy was such an archetype of our youth, but I guess now the bad boy is just an artsy bad boy. I don't know. I find that idea funny of like it's switched from the kind of... I think because of Me Too and discussions about like male violence nowadays, like what every heartthrob has in common is that that jacked kind of gets in a street fight, wears a leather jacket thing, just comes across as like scary and not hot now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know what red flags are and like,
yeah,
can spot when men haven't been to therapy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I can't. The sexiest thing about this entire piece is, where did this writer find this hero photo of Pedro Pascal holding up a bottle of Castillero del Diablo, which is the red wine that like every single person drinks in London from the fucking offie? That is so. Yeah. Just like
the 9-pound Sainsbury's red wine.
Yeah, that's, didn't we used to drink that? Didn't we used to drink that for the pod? That exact wine?
I certainly think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's like that, him holding that wine. Yeah, it's even just like.
He looks so fucking hot.
He looks so hot, and it's just being in with the culture and knowing that, knowing that he's like signaling to us by holding that up with his little shirt unbuttoned. So what do you think, because I'm like, I think what makes him a great case study in it is because it's as though he doesn't know, but he does know. Whereas someone like Harry Styles and Timothée Chalamet are too young, I think, to play it properly. And they just really leaned into it in this like annoying soft boy way. Whereas Pedro Pascal is just a bit older and he's kind of like, I'm doing my own thing, whatever. And then he'll just wear shorts on the Met Gala red carpet and we're like, he does know. He's just really clever.
I think the secret to Pedro Pascal is, and the writer mentions this in this piece, is that he seems sexless. Like, and I don't know if that's really good marketing by him or if he's just like asexual or like keeps his relationship super private or whatever. But I think the fact that there's no romance, like he's not attached to anyone in our brain romantically. He doesn't even really, even in like The Last of Us, he played a dad. He played like a caring dad. He didn't even really have like a girlfriend in it.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of sexless in that show as well.
Well, he had that girlfriend, but that was such a weird sexless relationship. Nobody believed that.
They knocked her off early. Yeah. We were all like, phew.
Yeah. That was, I feel like she was so badly cast. I was like, I don't believe this for a second.
But I think that's part of it. I think if he dated like Ana de Armas,
Isaac Gonzalez, him. Yeah,
Isaac, you know what I mean, if he dated some really hot person, I think it would break the spell. And in some ways I think he's either hyper aware of that and or it's we're actually just responding to something about him, which is that he's very charming and sexy, perhaps because he feels kind of unthreatening or he feels paternal in this weird way, or he just doesn't read sleazy. Whereas I think the younger ones all read sleazy because we're so aware of, like, you know.
As you were speaking, I was like, the only way he could do it is to do a Keanu Reeves. And then I see that she mentioned Keanu Reeves in the piece saying
yes,
that he's become hot in the last 4 decades. I would say literally last 4 years for me. And then he just cemented it with his hot, artsy, older woman girlfriend who just...
Alexandra Grant.
Who he just like pashes on the red carpet. I love it. I want to get a tattoo of those two on the red carpet.
Same. That's, yeah. Yeah, that's, I agree. He became hot when they started. Yeah. Yeah, that's what Pedro should do next. But I think that's part of it. And I think that's what's funny is... Yeah, there's something funny about how like our perception of heartthrobs change as they have more relationships, you know, like Harry Styles just had this brief little glorious moment and now it's just been burst.
Harry Styles has slept with like upwards of 7 girls that I know. Like, like he needs to chill.
Yeah. Yeah, he needs to stop. It's like Bieber. Like, you know how everyone had like a bit of a soft spot for Bieber after Boyfriend came out? And then you just found out that like everyone you knew someone who'd been to like
a concert and been had their pulled, phones taken away from the crowd. Yeah.
Are we slut-shaming these boys? Like, I'm like, is
no,
this...
No, I'm just like, okay, he did. He very likely has slept with like 3 of the Kardashians. Like, that's too many.
Yeah.
It reminds me in a really funny way of what I think we're gonna probably speak about on the Patreon, is, but I would like to briefly speak about it now, is Gwyneth's Call Her Daddy interview, where Alex Cooper was like asking if she was just saying, you've got such an amazing track record of dating all these heartthrob men. And she was just like, can you just name one more that we don't know about that you've slept with? And Gwen was like, no, but there are heaps, basically. And then Alex Cooper starts guessing and she goes, what about Leo? And Gwyneth was like, no, he tried, but he's been very loose since he was like 19. Giving it away.
I wrote that in like caps.
Oh my God. Yes. So funny.
So funny.
Just been doing that since he was 19. So it took, she wouldn't hook up with him. I love it.
I love her. She just knows.
Yeah, she's always correct.
Leo. She's always, always correct.
Who would you say is your, I mean, it just changes all the time, doesn't it? I was going to say who's your ultimate. Oh, I can't even think for myself.
Yeah, I've got a real thing for Adrian Brody, as I think we've talked about before. But going to have to go up against old Georgina. I don't think I'm going to win that one. Who's yours?
I can't think because I have a memory like a sieve. I'm like, I don't even know who I find attractive. You probably know better than me who I find attractive. Well, obviously when I was younger, I like loved Hugh Grant, but that was because of like the rom-coms.
I was talking to a friend about this recently and we were saying Dev Patel's pretty like female gaze.
Yeah.
Like
he's so hot.
Heartthrob energy. He's so hot. And I'm like 90. The last time I checked in, he has this gorgeous Australian girlfriend, Tilda. And they live in Adelaide together.
Yeah.
We just like live there together. It's like literally the most precious thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah, he's ridiculously hot. Yeah, there are men like that that are just around that you kind of forget about and then you're like, oh, he's so sexy.
But Paul Mescal's an interesting one. I just saw him on stage doing Streetcar Named Desire and he just has these like, he's kind of like squat and broad and he just has these like thick legs.
I know.
We're in shorts.
I know. Like,
Paul, put those.
He's like a rugby player.
Away.
Yeah, he's an interesting example. But I think he's kind of not that much of an interesting example actually, because he's kind of just like, he's kind of that typical jockey looking guy who looks as though he's dumb and then he surprises us because he's actually smart and cultured.
Yeah.
Which is a very specific section of like turning women on.
I think if he had, I think people would always have fallen in love with him, but I think what people really fell in love with was like seeing Connell. But I think Connell is just like the female gaze incarnate. Like, yeah, a jock who's like mean to you in high school and then realizes that like you're the most beautiful woman in the world and like pines over you for 4 years and reads literature and like blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, that's everyone's dream. So I feel like everyone got confused a bit by that. And I think if just say like After Sun had come out, I do think people would still love him, but it would be different.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I wonder who's next. I guess we just can't, you don't know until they're in some sort of sexy role.
Enter Paul Mescal and Pedro Pascal, both unconventionally hot heartthrobs. They're sensitive and humble, but also sexy. They seem to have a deep well of sadness inside them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. That's attractive. That's how I kind of feel like, are you up to date with Succession? Like, you don't even have to be, but just like Alexander Skarsgård this season. He's too conventionally handsome, but I just find him hot because I feel like he has a deep well of sadness.
Yeah, he's deeply disturbed.
Yeah, he's complex.
I'm finding Succession boring.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I'm
the last two episodes, so the one that came out on Sunday, it's like Tuesday and I haven't watched it. I've watched half of it, then I kept turning it off and going off and doing other more exciting things, like tidying up.
Sad. No.
Yeah.
I'm loving it.
But I found like the first episode kind of boring. I loved the big episode and then have just kind of like, I liked the episode when they were at Alexander Skarsgård's team's thing in Europe. But yeah, now I'm just like, I don't know.
I was on a high, and everything since then has felt like a letdown. I'm pretty excited. I just need to see how it pans out. I need to be free from it.
Ask ChatGPT and see what they say and see if they're right.
They say the ending will be.
We should.
Yeah.
We should ask ChatGPT to do an episode for us.
Yeah, I'm really, this is where my fear of AI and my excitement at AI cross over. Imagine getting AI to produce the pod. And we just put in a bunch of shit. And it's like, blah, 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 girly, girly, bush, shut it. It probably would sound smarter than us. Probably be more interesting.
No, but we could use it in a way where we say this is what our listeners love to listen to, what's happened this week. Yeah. That they might find interesting in the world, and it might be able to pull out stuff that we would miss.
Yeah. Yeah, let's try it. Let's have a go.
Have you heard of the show that came out called Jury Duty on Amazon?
No.
I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard really good things, and I'm unsure if it will be up my alley, but I feel like it will be up your alley. And it's a mockumentary style show where they are jury. They're all on jury duty. And apparently it's really, really funny. And I've heard rave reviews, and I haven't put it on yet, but that's because I don't know how much I like the mockumentary style thing. Like, I didn't love that that one. The one with the guy who set up all the situations.
Oh, Nathan For You. Yeah. Yeah. Has to be good.
So yeah, we should both watch it and see if it's good. And then the other one I want to watch is Swarm, which is that one that I think briefly talked about that Donald Glover made, and it's also on Amazon, and it's about a super fan, and it's based on Beyonce, but in the show, the singer's named something different, and she's obsessed with her and then goes crazy and starts like murdering people.
That sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah. And it's so based on Beyonce that at one point she's dating a girl and the girl says, I'm not a huge fan of her. I like her sister better. And apparently it's, crazy. It's really dark and like makes you want to have a hot shower afterwards, but good. Two recs that I have not yet watched that we should all watch as a collective.
Yeah. Two great recs. Yeah, movie, TV show club. I've been watching Barry, which is on after Succession on HBO.
Oh, yeah. What do you think of it?
I actually really like it. I feel like I liked the first season, lost me for a bit, pulled me back in. I really like Bill Hader. So
yeah, I haven't started it yet, but apparently one of the writers for Barry goes to the Pilates studio I go to, and the Pilates teacher is crazy, and she always says she just talks and talks and talks and kind of relays her love life and all this stuff. And then she said that the writer from Barry stopped doing Pilates and was writing down what she said to put it into the show.
Ah, that's cool. Be so fun being a TV writer.
Yeah.
Be so intimidating, but so fun.
Yeah. I mean, I guess your brain would just switch and you would start to listen, and which is what we should do. And I can never get my brain into that mentality of like looking for a story when I'm out and about and just being, I just think literally one of my biggest, one big flaw is that I'm just so not that curious. I'm just not that curious. Someone will be like, someone will just be like, AI is going to kill us all. And I'll be like, yeah, probably. But I won't like delve into it that much. Or I guess when my ADD brain gets stuck on something, it'll get like so stuck on one specific thing. But it's like quite hard to get me roped in.
Do you think it's an ADD thing, or do you think it's a...
I don't know. Partly sometimes I think part of it is like not wanting... I think... Sometimes, especially when I'm talking to other people, I'll come off as more nonchalant because if I don't know something, if I don't know about something, I don't want to sound stupid. So I'll kind of just be like, oh, yeah. But then also I just think I won't go home later and like look it up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's interesting.
You're very curious.
Yeah, I feel like I'm quite a curious girl.
It's such a nice way to be.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if it'll make a difference now with your, like, having the ability to focus more and change it.
I have found little things with the mids. I mean, it's been really hard because I've been taking my ADD mids for a month, but this whole month has been really disruptive. So it's been just like my boyfriend came over and then we went to like Mexico City and like nothing has been in routine. So it's been kind of hard to figure out if my productivity has been better. But then with little things like on the plane to Mexico, I brought the Paris Review and then I read it front to back, the whole thing without stopping.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Right?
Unheard of. You're like, I read my New Yorker when it arrived.
I mean, I've got like 18 of those that are just like collecting dust on the floor. I'm like, why am I subscribed to this? The It Girl one I just found in my letterbox. And I was like, well, I've already read all of this shit online.
That's great though.
But I read it from front to back and then the man beside me goes, oh, am I sitting beside an intellectual? I was like, you're sitting beside someone on ADD meds, sir.
That's true. That's I would just take a second look.
Yeah.
That's someone that just sat and powered through from start to, that's like insane.
Even the poems. And I was like, I don't even find these interesting.
Those, anything like that, like review of books, New Yorker, even New York, like they should come out 2 or 3 times a year.
How often does the Paris Review come out? It's,
I actually don't know.
Because what is,
it's
is this
weekly, I think.
Wait, is this, what is this?
Yes. Okay. I'm thinking the Paris Review of Books.
Right. This is just like a book, but it has a bunch of different.
Yeah, that's giant, Izzy.
It has a bunch of different poems, interviews with authors, and stories in it. It's so, yeah. It was so special. And it had a big interview with Mary Gatskill, who I love.
I love her too.
Yeah, she's so great. And she was just talking about the art of fiction and her writing process. And I find that so interesting. I love hearing about people's different processes, but would love to hear from just like journalists as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the processes thing is so, so, so interesting. I feel like it's so nice when you read enough of what other people do, because then you just realize there's no correct way to do something. Like you just have to find whatever works to make you get something done.
Mary Gatskill was saying that she can't write more than like a paragraph a day. She was just like, I can't do it. I find it really hard. I do not find writing easy. And I think what they make you feel is that it should just pour out, or I don't know.
That's so funny you say that, because I was watching I was reading a book by Jeffrey. I feel really bad. I can't say his name and I still haven't looked it up. But Jeffrey Eugenides, the guy who wrote Middlesex and Virgin Suicides. I was watching a talk on YouTube that he did with Zadie Smith, and they were saying the same thing. They were like, I will sit at my desk and try and write from 8 till 3. And if I get a good 400 words, I've had a really good day. And I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
How do you write a book? Aren't books 100,000 words?
I know, but that takes them years and years and years. I'm trying.
And I think that's find it. Sitting and finessing one piece of writing for a day, do you think? Or do you think that's just physically getting it out of your body?
Well, I don't know, because I also don't, for me, I think I liked listening to when Roxane Gay did her masterclass. And she was just like, just get the words out instead of sitting and trying. And that's how I work, because my memory is like a sieve. So if I don't get the words out as I'm thinking them, just write and write and write, and then go back and edit and cut stuff out later and be like, no, that was shit. And then I'll redo that paragraph, or I'll delete a whole paragraph and start the intro again. That's what she said, and that's kind of what I do. But I don't know what these people are doing. She said, how much can you write on a good day? Sometimes it's only a paragraph. I think the most I've ever written in one go is 4 pages. This woman has so many books. I can't remember the last time that happened. As for the stories in Bad Behavior, which is amazing, if you guys haven't got that book of her short stories, She said, with the exception of Heaven, each took me about a month to draft. And they're just, they're short stories. I guess a month working on a short story isn't that long, but when you, because that's the thing, it's like when you're actually doing something daily, you will like do it.
Yeah, it's like everything happens. It's just consistency.
Yeah, it will happen slowly.
It's like showing up and doing it. Yeah, that's what's so fucking hard. And I think when you want to do fiction, it's like the hardest part is your first thing, because that's the thing that you don't, like in an ideal world, you write something and people think it's at least good enough that you can get like an advance to do something else, then you can just write for your job. But like when you're doing all of this shit to get paid and then trying to find like time within that to do something, fiction, that's like, that's so fucking hard. So fucking hard.
Okay. Little long-winded rambling based off the back of the fact that my mug was on top of the Paris Review. and we got to go over to Patreon.
Yeah. Love you guys.
Bye, girlies.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.